Our 2013-14 season is built around themes of love. Love is a very strong emotion, and as strong emotions do, they find their way into music very often.
And that's how the conversation began. Good evening, I'm Eric Radeke. We are going to be taking a look and a little bit of a listen to the upcoming classics concert season that the Rockford Symphony Orchestra will be premiering in just a few short days, a season that is packed full of music of love. Many different aspects of love will be looked at in each and every concert, and each and every concert will have its own special theme based on amour. Thanks so much for tuning in to Free Range Radio. Here is Stephen Larson as we begin tonight's show, once again introducing the theme of the season and getting specific about all of the pieces of music that you'll hear in each and every classics concert, beginning with concert number one.
Well, our 2013-14 season is built around themes of love. Love is a very strong emotion, and as strong emotions do, they find their way into music very often. So our first concert, our opening concert of the season, is based on themes of romantic love. We start off with a very much underplayed piece, I think, although familiar to some of the older listeners, Reznicek's overture to his opera Donna Diana, better known to most people of a certain age as the theme music to Sergeant Preston of the Yukon. But a great, bubbly, wonderful romantic piece. Daniel Dorff, a contemporary composer, wrote a piece based on a little tone poem based on Gustav Klimt's famous artwork, The Kiss. We are bringing back one of our favorite singers, Kathy Pyatt, to do three operatic arias that showed different aspects of romantic love. Je veux vivre from Gounod's opera Romeo and Juliet, A forse lui and Sempre libera from Verdi's opera La Traviata, and Abscheuliche Wo eilst du hin from Beethoven's single opera Fidelio. The second half of the program is, I think, where it all really comes together into one of my favorite pieces, Edward Elgar's wonderful Enigma Variations. Elgar, great Victorian composer, English Victorian composer, wrote this piece in 1898-99, and wrote this as a tribute to his closest friends and to his wife. He starts out with a theme, or at least the suggestion of a theme, and then 14 variations follow. Each one is dedicated to one of his friends or to his wife. Sometimes a very humorous and sometimes very touching depiction of their relationship with him. The theme itself, that's the enigma, the question here, because as he says itself, the theme itself is not played. It is never heard. So what is the theme? There have been many, many answers to that over the years. People guessing from nursery rhymes to Rule of Britannia and all sorts of other things. But he went to his grave preserving the mystery. Probably the most familiar section to this piece is the variation number 10 called Nimrod. This is dedicated to his friend Augustus Jaeger. Jaeger in German means hunter, and he called this Nimrod because of Nimrod is described in the Bible as being a mighty hunter in the sight of the Lord. Jaeger wasn't really a hunter, he was a musician. This is just a play on his name. But he and Elgar used to take long walks together talking about the beauty of Beethoven's adagios. And in fact, Elgar says that this movement recalls the opening of Beethoven's Pathetique Sonata. To the English, this piece has the same place in their national culture as Barber's Adagio does for us. It's a piece of commemoration, a piece for mourning, a piece for contemplation, and it is often used in those circumstances. And it is unquestionably one of the most beautiful moments of music ever written.
Here is variation number 9, Nimrod, from the Enigma Variations of Sir Edward Elgar, performed by Paavo Järvi and the Cincinnati Symphony Orchestra.
Thank you.
Paavo Järvi and the Cincinnati Symphony Orchestra performing Nimrod, one of the variations from Elgar's Enigma Variations, a work that will be featured in the Opening Night Gala, which begins the 2013-2014 Classics Concert Season by the Rockford Symphony Orchestra. The performance, Saturday, September 21st.
Classics 2 is about the love of nature. We start with a piece by a contemporary American composer who wrote a work called Aqua, which he said is an homage to Jacques Cousteau, the famous French underwater explorer. And we go from there to a piece not often heard in concert halls these days. Vincent Dandy wrote a number of really underplayed pieces. This is one of my favorites. It's called A Symphony on French Mountain Air, on the French Mountain Air. And it really is a kind of a piano concerto light. The piano part is not really substantial enough to be considered a first-class solo vehicle for a pianist, but it still is front and center featured. We are using a fairly recent Rockford arrival, Rockford transplant, Jesse Parker, who is a wonderful pianist. Jesse is somewhere in his 80s, I'm not exactly sure where, but he is a terrific pianist, and he's very excited about playing this. No concert about the subject of the love of nature, I think, would be complete without some allusion to, or at least inclusion of, Beethoven's Symphony No. 6, the Pastoral Symphony. This five-movement piece, each movement of which has a title relating to some aspect of nature. Beethoven loved nature. He loved to walk in the outdoors. Although you don't need to know the program to appreciate this piece, if you do know the titles of the pieces, the scene by the brook, for instance. The thunderstorm is pretty obvious, and the rejoicing of the peasants after the thunderstorm is over and the weather clears up at the end. It's one of his greatest works, although it's one of the even-numbered symphonies, considered to be not as substantial, I think wrongly so by many, as the odd-number symphonies. The sixth is probably the weightiest and the most important of all of those even-numbered pieces.
Herbert von Karajan leading the Berlin Philharmonic in a performance of the opening movement to the Symphony No. 6 of Beethoven, the Pastoral Symphony, the cornerstone work of Classics Concert No. 2, Love of Nature, a performance that will take place November 9th, 2013. I'm Eric Radeke, and you are listening to Free Range Radio on WNIJ.
Our third Classics Concert explores the theme of legendary love and the great lovers of legend, classical mythology. And we start off with Offenbach's overture to La Belle Hélène, the beautiful Helen. Helen of Troy, reputed to be the most beautiful woman in the world in antiquity. La Belle Hélène, a wonderful, delightful operetta by Offenbach. And then we go to a piece we've never done before, a piece actually that doesn't get played a whole lot, but it seems to be reviving a little bit. The so-called Butterfly Lovers Violin Concerto, written by two Chinese gentlemen, 1959. This is in the height of the Cultural Revolution in Communist China. They were both students at the Shanghai Conservatory, and they wrote a violin concerto that used traditional Chinese tunes and themes, many drawn from the Chinese opera. This piece has gotten some notoriety. It's used quite a bit in figure skating competitions, interestingly enough. It doesn't get done a whole lot because we Westerners tend to look down at pieces done by committee or by two people rather than by a single composer. But it's a beautiful work, a very, very beautiful work based on the story, a legendary story of two star-crossed lovers in Chinese mythology. We're bringing back Li Qin, a very talented Taiwanese violinist who's played with us about 10 years ago. She's coming back very excited to be playing this piece. If you talk about legends of love, I think you have to think back to Tristan and Isolde, one of the great love stories of all time, inspiration, a medieval love story for that matter, but inspired Wagner to write his opera of that name in 1865. The prelude in particular, but the opera as a totality is very often viewed as a precursor to the music of the 20th century. Its extreme chromaticism, it never resolves and constantly just shifting from one key to another. I'm not sure that that's really true, but the passion, the growing moments of fervor which never really resolve satisfactorily, that leave you hanging and wanting more, make this piece famous. Indeed, one of the as a concert excerpt, the prelude and the Liebestod, the first and the last scenes are one of the, I think, most beautiful pieces of music that ever anybody has ever written. Tchaikovsky There's Romeo and Juliet, the overture prelude to Romeo and Juliet. Three versions of this piece he wrote, 1870, 1872, before finally coming to the final version in 1880. Now, Romeo and Juliet could probably qualify under any category of love. Tragic love, legendary love, romantic love. But it's a very, very well-known story. And this overture, which we haven't done in quite a number of years, become very famous in pop culture too. This love theme finds its way popping up in lots of TV sitcoms and commercials and all over the place. It's sort of a parody of intense, passionate feeling that the two lovers might have for each other. But that aside, it's just a terrific piece of music, tour de force for the orchestra.
Sir George Schulte leading the Chicago Symphony Orchestra in a performance of the Romeo and Juliet Fantasy Overture of Tchaikovsky. That work will be performed by the Rockford Symphony Orchestra in their classics concert entitled Legendary Loves. January 11th, 2014 will be the performance date. That also includes a number of other works mentioned by Stephen Larson, Offenbach, Wagner, and others. Eric Radeke here at 89.5 WNIJ. This is Free Range Radio for the Sunday evening, taking a look, previewing the upcoming 2013-14 Classics Concert Season by the Rockford Symphony Orchestra. The next performance, February 1st, 2014, entitled Tragic Desire. Here again, Stephen Larson.
Our fourth classics concert takes the theme of tragic love. No shortage of pieces that explore the idea of tragic love, because that's, after all, love gone wrong is the one that probably excites more people to write poetry and novels and music and country and western songs than anything else. But we're going to start off this concert with a piece that is tragic in name only, Brahms' Tragic Overture. A piece of absolute music, no programmatic intent there whatsoever, just tragic because it's written in D minor and seems to have that sort of a feeling about it. So it's therefore the name only. Sorry about that. No great literary connection with tragedy here, but we haven't done this piece in a while and I just couldn't resist it. From there on, we go to three fairly short excerpts from one of Hector Berlioz's largest pieces, The Damnation of Faust, from 1846. Enormous piece for chorus and soloists. An orchestra, and just huge, huge piece. The three excerpts are often, or at least in the past, were often excerpted for concert use, and really don't seem to have shown up a whole lot recently, at least in most programs I've been following. They're the Dance of the Sylphs, the Will of the Wisps, and the Rákóczi March, the Hungarian March. Those pieces put together form a nice little concert suite. Robert Schumann, his relationship with his wife Clara Schumann were, of course, one of the great love stories of 19th century romanticism, portrayed in movies, several different movies and novels. The passionate love they had for each other finally ending when Schumann died in 1856 of insanity brought on by tertiary syphilis. One of his later works was incidental music to Byron's Manfred, wrote in 1848, first performed in 1852. The Overture to Manfred is one of his really more interesting individual pieces. I think he sidesteps the accusation that he doesn't orchestrate well in this piece. It's a very well thought out, very intense work from beginning to end. One of my favorite works by this composer. We come to the second half of the program. For me, a story of a tragedy that transcends all aspects of mere romantic love, and that's the tragedy of Dmitri Shostakovich and the Fifth Symphony, and the tragedy in his relationship with his home country, the Soviet Union, with Joseph Stalin, his disillusionment, and what this meant to the rest of his musical career. Shostakovich was the first Russian composer to really have been born in and really come of age in the Soviet Union. He didn't know Tsarist Russia before the 1917 revolution. He was a Soviet citizen from his earliest years and considered to be the most brilliant and promising young Soviet composer. In the early Soviet Union, as if you were an artist, your job was to write music. You were paid well for it. You were rewarded for it. But your music had to, in some way, glorify and to lift up the political system that you were living in. Shostakovich got a little bit, I think, too enamored of his status as the front runner and as a Soviet composer in the mid-1930s. And when he wrote his Lady Macbeth of the Mtsensk district in 1936, it was denounced by the authorities, and specifically by Stalin himself, in an editorial that everybody understood was written by Stalin, called "Muddle Instead of Music." At that point, Shostakovich realized that his life was in danger. His friends began shunning him. People would cross the street when they would see him coming. They didn't want to be seen with him. He had to withdraw his Symphony No. 4 because he knew that this was going to displease the authorities. And at any moment, that knock at the door in the early hours of the morning could come and he would never be heard from again. From April through June of 1937, he set about writing a symphony, his fifth symphony, which he subtitled The Response of a Soviet Artist to Just and Deserved Criticism, as an apology, at least on the face of it, to Stalin, to the Soviet Union. But as the people at the premiere appeared to know, and as people have known ever since, this was a tremendous cri de coeur by Shostakovich against the repression of the Soviet system, against Stalin, and an assertion of his own artistic freedom. It's a heartbreaking piece, at once terribly, dismally desolate and without hope, at times sarcastic and biting, and finally working itself up to an enormously forced triumph at the end. It's been said that in this piece, Shostakovich is saying, "You want me to rejoice? I am rejoicing. Do you see me rejoicing? I am rejoicing loudly." Out of all Shostakovich's symphonies, his 15 symphonies, this is the one that has captured the imagination of the public the most, and is the most often played. I think it is heartbreaking, and also raises the spirits to see what happens when somebody is confronted with potential loss of freedom, the potential loss of his life, and responds to it artistically in a way that still preserves his own dignity and makes a statement for all to hear for the rest of eternity.
Summing up the concert experience that would be had if you attend Tragic Desire, the February 1st, 2014 Classics Concert No. 4. This is Free Range Radio. Eric Radeke with you, and we are talking with Stephen Larson as he explains each and every work that will be heard during this upcoming 2013-14 Classics concert season. March 8th, 2014 will be the next concert. Songs of a Wayfarer is the title Stephen Larson has chosen. Here again, Stephen, to tell us about this March 8th performance.
Our fifth classic concert deals with unrequited love. We're starting, these are all three very well-known romantic composers. We start with Gustav Mahler, one of his earliest pieces, The Songs of the Wayfarer, a song cycle consisting of four songs that he wrote from 1884 all the way up to 1896 when he finally finished with them. The poems are his own, although they were very strongly influenced by the traditional poems of the Knaben Wunderhorn. And deal with a man's response to a woman who jilts him, from sorrow to acceptance to giddiness. I'm alive after all, and isn't it wonderful? Isn't life really wonderful in spite of all this? To anger, and finally the acceptance at the end. These four movements were originally written for piano and voice, and then later brilliantly orchestrated by the composer itself. It will be sung by Gerard Sundberg, returning to Rockford. Great artist with a beautiful voice. These songs have a personal place of importance for me because these are one of the first works of Mahler that I remember listening to, and at a time when I had fantasies or pretensions of being a singer myself, I thought one day I'd sing these, and I gave it a crack, but nobody will ever hear me sing them in public. I will never do it, but they have always been one of my favorite Mahler works. Jean Sibelius, the great Finnish composer. Most of Sibelius's works were written on nationalistic themes and mostly deriving from the Kalevala, the Finnish national epic. And his tone poem, Pohjola's Daughter, written in 1906, takes an episode from the Kalevala and treats it as a very colorfully orchestrated tone poem, one of his most colorful scores. One little tidbit about this piece is that it's been claimed that a scene from this tone poem, the theme where Pohjola is laughing at her would-be suitor, was the inspiration to Bernard Herrmann's stabbing music in Psycho. Love to hear what people think after hearing this piece, if they hear that connection. And for me, the best example of unrequited love in music is Richard Strauss's epic tone poem, Don Quixote, a theme and variations written in 1898, in which Don Quixote, the character from Cervantes' wonderful Spanish novel, this elderly man, actually middle-aged man in the description, he just seems elderly now because that's the way we usually see him portrayed, who reads so many books about knightly chivalry in the Middle Ages, he goes mad and fantasizes that he himself is a knight and goes off on errands of knightly chivalry to rescue the afflicted and take care of damsels in distress, accompanied by his faithful sidekick, Sancho Panza. And in this great tone poem, Don Quixote is portrayed by the solo cello and Sancho Panza by the solo viola. Our soloist in this case will be our principal cellist, Mike Beard, and our principal violist, Ben Weber, two wonderful musicians. This extremely colorful, sometimes humorous, and sometimes touchingly beautiful piece has a number of different scenes. That each variation corresponds to a scene from Cervantes' novel. One of my favorite is when Don Quixote goes and jousts against the flock of sheep. As only Strauss can do, portrays the bleeding of the sheep and their eventual rousting by Don Quixote in extremely realistic tonal terms, that you can almost see the sheep in the bleating of the woodwinds.
Stephen Larson talking about the penultimate concert in the 2013-14 Classics concert season of the Rockford Symphony Orchestra, Songs of a Wayfarer, a performance that takes place March 8th, 2014. Eric Radicke with you. Thank you very much for listening to this evening's Free Range Radio. Up next, Stephen Larson takes us through the final concert of the 2013-14 season, Love of Homeland.
Our last classic concert is built around the love of country, the love of one's homeland. We tend to think of this a lot as in American patriotic terms. In the 4th of July, we do a concert with lots of patriotic music. In this case, I was very careful to not feature any American composers on this concert. I wanted to just explore the love of homeland through the eyes and the ears of composers from other countries. When we're talking about love of homeland, inevitably we're getting into the nationalist period of the Romantic era. And when we talk about nationalism, we can't help but talk about the Czechs, Dvorak and Smetana. Smetana being his slightly elder composer, Bedřich Smetana, were the two composers who really gave the Czech people a musical identity. First Smetana, who established a Czech national opera style, and in his most famous works, Mavlast, six tone poems, Mavlast meaning my homeland, wrote these just stirring, beautiful tributes to his native land. The most familiar to American audiences anyway, certainly Vltava, or more commonly known by the German name, the Moldau, a very descriptive tone poem depicting the river as it begins from two sources high in the mountains and finally ends as it flows past the old castle Visehrad near downtown Prague before flowing off into the distance. One of the, I think, most beloved and popular for good reason, the works of Czech music, and very fondly in the heart of certainly any person of Czech ancestry. Antonín Dvořák wrote a number of music on Czech themes. Strangely enough, one of his least well-known is the piece he calls My Homeland. We will open the concert with that particular work. From there we go to an American transplant, Hungarian composer Erno Dohnányi, or as he's often known by the German form of his name, Ernst von Dohnányi, Hungarian-born concert pianist, composer, and conductor, who moved to the United States after the Second World War and took up residence here, taught in a couple of different universities, and became an American citizen, became very fond and very proud of his adopted country, and wrote a number of pieces that on that theme. We're playing American Rhapsody, a piece he wrote in 1953 for the sesquicentennial of Ohio, the Ohio University in Athens, Ohio. And this is a piece that uses a number of American folk tunes and a really joyful, boisterous celebration of what it is for a foreign-born artist to embrace what it is to become an American citizen and all that is wonderful about this country. Our final piece is a classic work in not only in terms of its origin in film, but also as a piece of concert music. In 1938, Sergei Prokofiev, a Russian composer who left the Soviet Union in its early years and then came back, became a Soviet citizen once again, and to mixed results. In 1938, teamed up with the famed Soviet filmmaker Eisenstein, and to provide music for his film Alexander Nevsky. Nevsky was a 12th century, if I'm not mistaken, Russian figure who led the citizens of Novgorod against the Teutonic invaders, the Swedish knights, and to a spectacular victory, which culminated in the so-called Battle on the Ice, when the heavily armored Teutonic knights rode out for full battle onto the ice with their war horses and ended up crashing through the ice, being routed by the Russian defenders. Prokofiev made the film music for the movie into a concert suite for chorus, large orchestra, and mezzo-soprano soloist. And it is one of the most exciting, hair-raising, brilliantly scored works, I think, that I know. We are singing it in English. I think from the time of Fritz Reiner, there's been a tradition that in English-speaking countries, generally speaking, the choruses will sing this piece in English for maximum comprehensibility. The scene of the battle on the ice is just electrifying orchestration and ends with a great patriotic celebration, the joy of the people of Novgorod after the victory in the final movement.
a performance of the Moldau from the Vienna Philharmonic, James Levine conducting, music of Bedrich Smetana, and one of the works that will be featured in the final classics concert, Love of Homeland, in the upcoming 2013-14 classics concert season of the Rockford Symphony Orchestra. For Stephen Larson, Artistic Director of the Rockford Symphony Orchestra, I'm Eric Radeke, thanking you very much for tuning in to this evening's Free Range Radio on 89.5 WNIJ DeKalb Rockford, WNIQ Sterling, WNIW LaSalle, and WNIE Freeport. Please visit our sister station's website, WNIU.org, for dates when WNIU will broadcast all of these classics concerts as they are performed throughout the upcoming season. Again, Eric Radeke with you. Thanks for listening. It's 7 o'clock. Sound Opinions is next here on 89.5 WNIJ.